The following is a production of Alabama Public Radio News.
I hurt so bad, and I just stayed in bed. Like, for years I stayed in bed. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't wait on myself.
40 miles here, back in Missouri, there's a different way of life.
I'm Pat Duggins, Alabama Public Radio News. We're sitting at the dining table with Faye. She asked us not to use her real name. During our visit, one of her favorite songs plays in the background on an old portable CD player. Faye is 72, and following her first ever mammogram in the year 2000, she found she had breast cancer.
And then they told me on top of that, they said that I had the worst kind. And I said, well, cancer? I said, well, what is the worst kind? Cancer is just bad no matter how you look at it.
It didn't stop there.
It metastasized to my spine, they swear. My back kept hurting and kept hurting, and I kept running to the doctor.
For Faye, running to the doctor takes explaining. That's because of where she lives in rural Alabama. The nearest cancer specialist is in Tuscaloosa. That's an hour and a half away by car, and Faye didn't have one. She scraped together $600 for a used truck. Her latest checkup meant hitting the road at 2 a.m. She says that meant fewer stoplights.
Do you know that that truck made it all the way down there? Without you know, me having to stop for it, because it was just making all kind of weird noises, like because the transmission was gone. It wouldn't change gears. It wouldn't do nothing. It would just creep along.
And a study from the Alabama Department of Health says Faye may be one of the lucky ones. The report shows 16% of rural residents in Alabama have no transportation at all.
Rainy snowball stuff.
People are doing without the health care that they need because there are not facilities and people don't have the money.
This is Julia. Like Faye, she doesn't want us to use her real name. 54 of Alabama's 67 counties are considered rural. That includes Julia's hometown, which looks like a slice of Middle America. Rural health advocates say 7 of these counties have no hospital at all. That includes Coosa County, which doesn't even have a doctor. In these communities, unemployment is often high, and poverty is often common. Julia says rural health care is a constant worry.
I have 3 kids that wear glasses, 3 kids who, you know, 3 kids total, but you've got to have dental appointments every year, eye appointments every year, and then when they're sick.
And then there are the shortcuts to get health care. At one point, Julia's family raised cattle. They don't do that anymore, but when they did, they worked with a local veterinarian. Julia says if her husband needed medical help and he didn't want to wait in line or face copays, well, you know where this is going.
Living in rural areas and working on farms, most men aren't going to take off and go to the doctor, or there's not enough time. And so, as you know, it just happens.
Julia admits it's not always a matter of convenience, and the choice of people seeing their vet instead of their doctor often comes down to money.
I know of local people who've ran up and got an x-ray at the vet clinic to see if it was really broke or not, because they don't want the expense of hospital, what they've got to pay to go there.
National health advocates say Alabama is ground zero for everything that's wrong with rural health care. Studies rank Alabama worst in the nation for infant mortality. The state also has the most diabetics. In 2016, the city of Gadsden, east of Birmingham, had the lowest life expectancy in the United States. Despite all this, rural health advocates complain hospitals in Alabama get the lowest reimbursement nationally for Medicare. That's why 80% of hospitals in the state are losing money.
I think people in the United States of America just don't realize that places like Perry County, Alabama, still exist.
Perry is one of the 7 counties in Alabama that has no hospital. And if you want someone who's happy about that, don't talk to Kendall Gilchrist.
We have actually lived in a third world country for a period of our lives. And there were more resources and more networks of support for us as a family in that third world country than there has been here.
Kendall, her husband Eric, and their 3 young children live in the town of Marion. The Gilchrists work at Judson College. On the subject of dealing with rural health care, Eric has an example from just last week.
My son falls out of bed in the middle of the night. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. And he wakes me up, and he has blood rushing down his face, and he had gashed the corner of his eye open, and there's blood, you know, all over his face.
Between them, the Gilchrists have 4 master's degrees and a Ph.D., but even that didn't help them get around the fact that Perry County doesn't have a hospital. The Alabama Rural Health Association says families in 6 other counties could be asking questions like this one.
It's 2:00 in the morning in rural Alabama. What do you do?
Get down from there. Don't fall.
Get down, Dee.
Just one county to the north, things seem less tense. Joseph Marchant's big concern is making sure 2 boys don't fall off a 4-foot-tall stone wall outside the Bibb Medical Center. Marchant is the CEO. This rural hospital in the town of Centerville in Bibb County is just 25 miles north of Marion, where the Gilchrists live, but it feels like a world away.
Good. The lab, you can see, it's centrally located right here.
Along with the hospital, Bibb Medical Center has a dental clinic and a nursing home. Marchant says finances are tight, but it works.
Our system here is a little different because I think we're a little more unique than some because of the diversification that we have on our campus. You know, rural hospitals have some secret sauce, and we can do things. We have to be lean because you can't stay in business if you're not.
When the son of Eric and Kendall Gilchrist gashed his eye, they wanted specialists in Birmingham to handle it. That meant a 3-hour round trip by car. Still, Joseph Marchant says Bibb Medical Center serves his community, and it's not among the 80% of hospitals in Alabama operating in the red. Bibb has 35 medical beds. Alabama will only certify hospitals with a minimum of 15.
Unfortunately, they have to have 15 in Alabama.
That's Dale Quinney. He's executive director of the Alabama Rural Health Association. He's looking for something in between the feast in Bibb County and the famine in Perry.
Well, there are some communities that perhaps can afford a hospital financially. Their patients will make it profitable that don't really need 15 beds.
That begs the question, how low can you go when it comes to the number of beds in a hospital?
We had 3.
That's Debbie Berry. She's director of operations at the Greene County Hospital in Leakesville, Mississippi. And you heard right. She said 3.
But when you think 3 beds, how in the world is that going to make it?
Dale Quinney says Leakesville does.
This hospital, 54 employees, 3 beds, and as we speak, it's expanding to 7 beds, is operating at a profit. So it can be done in the right location.
So we hit the road to have a look.
I'm Sarah Ulmer with what you need to know for the
month. Leakesville is a 3-hour drive southwest of Tuscaloosa, or an hour northwest if you're coming from Mobile. Once on the campus of Greene County Hospital, we head through a sliding glass door and up to the reception desk.
Most of our equipment is refurbished or used, and I'm not too proud to beg.
That's where we met Debbie Berry. An automated lab unit processes blood samples from Greene County's patient load. Barry says there are a lot of samples to handle.
It went from them seeing maybe 1 or 2 a day when we came here. We're seeing around 350 now a month. So our numbers have just climbed tremendously, but we offer so much more now than we did.
What makes it all work? Joseph Marchant talked about the secret sauce at his hospital. The sauce at Debbie Berry's is the Greene County Hospital employs nurse practitioners and no doctors to treat its patients. And it's that formula of fewer beds and no doctors that's the rub for regulators in Alabama.
I think it's a bit too simplistic.
That's Dr. Tom Geary with the Alabama Department of Public Health. He handles regulatory affairs, so he's familiar with how the business model of Leakesville's hospital will be received in Alabama.
It's more complex on the top of something that's already complicated.
Geary says the 15-bed minimum for rural hospitals in Alabama is due to state red tape. It means these facilities can expand in the future if they need to without a state relicensing process that can take years. Which takes us back to the town of Marion and Judson College, which is one of the big employers in Perry County. The voices of its college choir are one of the few signs of hope in a situation that seems to be otherwise bleak.
I think we don't even know how much it consumes our lives right now.
The irony for Kendall Gilchrist and her family is that even if the state of Alabama relented and allowed a smaller hospital for Perry County, there's no guarantee that hospital would include everything patients need. For example, Kendall has 3 children. She recalls the pregnancy that would have made it 4.
Early on, I got sick, and I thought it was just a stomach bug. I'm playing, you know, phone tag with this practice that I barely know, 90 miles away, talking to on-call physicians, trying to weigh, is it worth driving 180 miles round trip just to be told that I have a stomach bug? I end up choosing not to go in. And then about 5 weeks later, when I go to my monthly appointment, I find out the baby had died.
Labor's not fun anyway, but being jolted around in the back of an ambulance on rural roads is worse.
If there's anyone who can sympathize with Kendall Gilchrist, it's Ashley King. She's had her own problems with rural health care and childbirth. King lives in Hale County, southwest of Birmingham. And how many hours in an ambulance are we talking about?
It was two and a half to three, while I was in labor.
Hi, cutie pie. Mrs.
Washington. Okay. More on King's story in just a moment.
Okay. So how's he doing with feeding?
This four-month-old is getting a checkup at University Medical Center in Tuscaloosa. The hospital in west central Alabama attracts pregnant women from rural communities up to 90 miles away. That's roughly 24 counties.
Well, the average patient either does not hold a job or works in fast food restaurant, gas station.
Dr. Catherine Skinner directs the obstetrical unit at the center. She says many of her patients from rural Alabama tell a similar story when the baby comes.
They will need transportation, so they'll have to get their friend to drive them. That friend will probably miss work the next day and therefore miss their income. They need gas money to get here. And child care if they have other children.
That's one out of every five pregnancies Dr. Skinner sees every day. The reason University Medical Center is so popular with rural families comes down to the numbers. Alabama has 54 rural counties. Seven of these counties don't have a hospital. Of those that are left, only a fraction deliver babies.
Today, only 16.
We met Dale Quinney earlier. He's executive director of the Alabama Rural Health Association. Quinney says providing maternity care often boils down to the cost.
You have to have the specially trained staff and, of course, your specially trained family medicine physicians or OBGYNs. You have to have the labs, the incubators, special equipment. Those cost money. And you have to have that whether you have 10 births or 1,000.
And the financial burden isn't only because of staff and equipment.
With obstetrics, there are, you know, huge liabilities you can get into as well.
We met Joseph Marchant earlier, too. He's CEO of Bibb Medical Center in the rural town of Centerville, south of Birmingham. Marchant's hospital stopped delivering babies in the year 2000.
There's a lot of risk, and when you have risk, that certainly means that there could be substantial costs or problems if you have a bad outcome.
And to hear Ashley King tell it, her case could have fallen into that category. King first became pregnant when she was just 16 years old. Then roughly 12 weeks before she was due, this happened.
I started having chest pain, labor pains, migraines. I was blacking out, driving down the road in Dallas County.
Dallas County is about an hour south of where King lives. Just heading home wasn't an option because Hale County has only one small clinic.
They can do stitches and broken bones. Other than that, everything else goes to Tuscaloosa or Birmingham.
King and her unborn baby needed specialized care at UAB Hospital in Birmingham. That's 2 hours away.
I remember bits and pieces of that ambulance ride in the I remember first getting in the ambulance, and I remember how bad it hurt to be jolted around. In full-blown labor, it's not fun.
Yeah, good. So we just walked in the front of the hospital, and we're going to go to the med-surg unit and see.
And King isn't alone. Women in Bibb County face similar challenges finding obstetrical help when Bibb Medical Center stopped delivering babies in the year 2000.
And, of course, this is the main nurses' station in the hospital.
Joseph Marchant was in grade school when that decision was made. 2 years ago, that led Marchant to pose a question to the hospital's board and its staff members.
What would reopening obstetrics mean to the other parts of the system?
In 2015, after juggling the budget at Bibb Medical Center, they did.
You know, people drive up and they're ready to have a baby. So we have to make sure that we have a good, efficient process to get them through the system and get them admitted. And
the newly reopened maternity unit has four delivery rooms and a small waiting room. Bibb celebrated its 100th birth since delivery started again in 2015, and financially it's breaking even. But all may not be well. How the system works could be its greatest weakness. Marchant says the doctors who handle births at the hospital don't technically work for him.
They actually operate a medical practice here in Centerville, and they are an independent group that actually work out of a federally qualified health center.
That health center is paid for by a grant through the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. And all the talk in Congress about repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act has Marshall wondering how long the unit can stay open.
We look at what's working, we look at what's not working, we try to affect the things that don't work positively, and we try to enhance the things that do work, and it seems that in Congress sometimes that's not the way they do things.
Back at University Medical Center, a rural mother-to-be is getting a checkup after a 45-minute car trip. If Bibb County loses federal funding and its labor and delivery unit closes, it could mean more than just extra work for the doctors in Tuscaloosa.
We know that when labor and delivery units close, the infant mortality rate in that county rises.
For Dr. Catherine Skinner, that could lead to more examples of what she calls her nightmare patient scenario.
She knew she was having contractions. She knew it was time. And she arrived too late to be able to stop labor. And the baby was born very prematurely, hadn't had lots of medical issues because of it.
And studies often rank Alabama worst in the nation for infant mortality. Problems and issues related to rural health in Alabama aren't new. In fact, 2017 is the 45th anniversary of an Associated Press story on how the medical community worked against rural Alabamians based on their race. APR Stan Ingold explains this year also marked the 20th anniversary of the White House apology for the scandal.
You remember the Rodney King affair, right? Police beat the shit out of the guy. The Tuskegee story is the Rodney King story of medicine.
Meet Peter Buxton. He's known as the whistleblower on the Tuskegee study of untreated syphilis on the Negro male. In popular culture, it's also called the Tuskegee syphilis experiment.
Good morning. We give honor to Almighty God.
Buxton was the guest of honor at a ceremony at the Tuskegee History Center. It marked the 20th anniversary of the official White House apology for the syphilis experiment. The audience in Tuskegee included family members of the men involved in the study. They were all helped when Buxton and the Associated Press broke the story in 1972. He says back then, the turning point was a lunchroom chat with a co-worker at the U.S. Public Health Service.
I'll never forget what he was saying. He said the patient was insane, in desperate need of some kind of help. The family didn't know what to do.
This led Buxton to dig deeper. What he found was a medical conspiracy.
There's this study being run down in this place called Tuskegee, and everybody in the study is black.
Buxton uncovered a program at the Public Health Service of finding African-American men from rural Alabama who had syphilis. Instead of treating these patients, the disease was allowed to progress while researchers took notes. It had been going on for 40 years, since 1932. Buxton recalls one doctor in the Tuskegee area who got into trouble for trying to treat one of the subjects with antibiotics.
The poor doctor who did the right thing had the medical society and the county health authorities jump down his throat. Look what you've done. You've treated one of these guys. You're not supposed to treat them. If he had had, let's say, pneumonia, there would have been a procedure to go through some paperwork to get permission to save the guy's life, for Christ's sake.
In 1972, Buxton tipped off a reporter from the Associated Press, and the story soon broke.
The men started out wanting just for me to settle their lawsuit and get an apology.
That's attorney Fred Gray. Before Tuskegee, his client list included civil rights icon Rosa Parks.
And they wanted a permanent memorial here.
What was done cannot be undone, but we can end the silence.
Gray sued. The government settled, and in 1997, President Clinton gave the subjects of the Tuskegee syphilis study the words they wanted to hear.
What the United States government did was shameful, and I am sorry.
This is actually a copy of my great-granddaughter's death certificate.
That's Lloyd Clements. He attended a gathering over the summer to remember the 20th anniversary of President Clinton's apology.
And it actually indicates that he actually died from syphilis.
Clements is from Tuskegee, and several of his family members were a part of the study.
Initially, there was a lot of hurt and anger involved, knowing that my family was involved in it. Then the initial hurt turned to grief and sadness, then finally wanted to turn into a forgiveness on my part for my family.
While the Tuskegee scandal symbolizes the low point in rural health in Alabama, there is an area where the state appears to be making at least some progress. APR's Alex Abouchon explains it's a system where if rural residents can't visit the doctor may be able to visit the patient over the internet.
So how is everything today?
It's good.
Yeah?
Everything's going good.
Mary Epp is 84 years old and a home dialysis patient. She's had a routine follow-up appointment with her endocrinologist, Dr. Eric Wallace, at the University of Alabama at Birmingham School of Medicine. But Mrs. Epp isn't in Birmingham. She's at the Dallas County Health Department, 75 miles to the south.
They can not only see each other face-to-face, but they can use enhancements to listen to the heart rate, to monitor the EKG, to look in the ears and the eyes, the nose, the throat.
That's Dr. Walter Geary. He's medical director for the Alabama Department of Public Health. Thanks to telemedicine equipment at dozens of county health departments across the state, Dr. Wallace is able to provide Mrs. Epp and many other patients a full-fledged checkup hundreds of miles apart. I caught up with Dr. Wallace at a statewide conference on telehealth.
Probably 80% of what physicians need to do can be done by listening to the patient. But we also need a physical exam. So what happens is I use a telestethoscope to listen to the patient's heart and lungs and abdomen. I use specialized cameras to look at lesions in dialysis patients, the exit site.
Dr. Wallace says providing care remotely is more than a convenience for these patients. He says it's quickly becoming a necessity given the state of healthcare in Alabama.
If we had 500 doctors to land in Alabama today, we still wouldn't have enough.
Ron Sparks is a rural healthcare and telehealth advocate.
If we had 250 dentists to land in Alabama today, we wouldn't have enough. So access to healthcare is definitely a problem in the state of Alabama. Using technology and using telemedicine is a way to reach folks who don't have access to healthcare.
Sparks previously headed the state's Office of Rural Development under Governor Bentley. He says the expansion of telemedicine is inevitable.
You've either used telemedicine or you will use telemedicine. That's sort of the way it is. It's going to happen.
Bandwidth is one potential hurdle to a widespread adoption of telehealth. Many rural areas in the state don't have consistent cell service, much less broadband internet. And supporting the high-resolution video conferencing along with medical readings in a telehealth visit requires a lot of bandwidth. Ron Sparks says it's hard to understate the importance.
If you live in rural Alabama in today's world and you don't have access to broadband, that's like cutting off one of your main arteries to your heart. You're just not going to function very well.
But the Alabama Department of Public Health has an unusual leg up. Thanks to a state mandate, county health departments have special broadband infrastructure, and 60 of Alabama's 66 counties currently have the bandwidth for telehealth, even if other areas of those counties don't. Another model is gaining lots of steam across the border in Georgia, telemedicine systems in school.
Child's there at school all the time. That school nurse probably knows that child pretty well.
Sherry Williams works with the Global Partnership for Telehealth based in Georgia.
What if she is able to take that child to the next level by providing these care services into the mix? So it really becomes a whole lot bigger than just that primary care model. It truly can create a system of care.
Williams says school-based telehealth can fill major gaps in community health care, especially after rural clinics or hospitals in those areas close.
When a hospital closes, usually those primary care doctors leave also. So you're left with a huge void, not only for the children, but we're talking about entire populations at this point in time. So I think being able to put telehealth inside the schools is a huge step in the right direction in figuring out how to fill that health disparity in our rural communities.
Alabama is starting on the back foot in terms of telemedicine, but Dr. Wallace is optimistic about the near future.
What I foresee by being all the progress that we made thus far in the state, I foresee that at this time next year, you will have multiple subspecialties already at UAB providing care across the state. Important care that we need to actually improve the outcomes of patients in our state.
And that means patients like Mary Epp, dealing with a variety of complicated medical issues, can get quality health care a lot closer to home. All of the rural health solutions that we've looked at so far also have a price tag to consider. And as we wrap up our program, APR's Pat Duggins explains how Alabama falls short here as well.
We're losing about $1 million a year.
That's George Alford. He lives in rural Wilcox County, and he's not talking about his family budget.
Check out Jones Hospital. How can I help you?
Alfred is on the board of John Paul Jones Hospital in the town of Camden.
We couldn't even get groceries delivered to do the meals without pulling some strings with some people to, you know, get enough money to pay off, you know, for bread.
It gets just crazy. Everybody's running and helping.
Elizabeth Kennedy shows us around. She's the chief executive officer at John Paul Jones. Before you ask, the hospital isn't named for the famous naval war hero. Dr. Jones was a prominent physician in Camden. This hospital is a cash-strapped facility in a poor county. Very poor. In fact, in 2012, the U.S. Census Bureau listed Wilcox County as the most impoverished county in the nation. For rural hospitals in Alabama, there's an area where they rank badly as well.
If you're talking about Medicare, yes.
That's Dane Howard. She's chief policy officer for the Alabama Hospital Association. Howard says 80% of the rural hospitals in Alabama are losing money.
Healthcare is an odd bird as far as what is billed, what it costs, and what is reimbursed.
Take Medicare, for example. That's the federal insurance program for the elderly. Rural hospitals in Alabama complain they get paid the lowest Medicare reimbursement rates in the U.S. Dane Howard says that's because those rates are based on what hospital workers are paid, and that's where Alabama's rural hospitals get into trouble.
They've either remained level, or they've even had to have some reductions and staff layoffs. And so we're showing we're not paying as much wages as some of the other states. So guess what happens? We lose money to pay for the states who are paying higher.
In Alabama, rural hospitals typically get 60 to 70 cents from Medicare for every dollar's worth of treatment they provide. George Alford says at John Paul Jones Hospital in Camden, it's even worse.
We collected, I think, 30-some-odd percent of that.
There are plans in Congress to try to adjust Medicare reimbursement rates to make them more fair. George Alford says that wouldn't help at his hospital because of private insurers and Medicaid for the poor. They don't pay enough either.
10% see on Medicaid, so, and then Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and your other private insurers, we collected about 40%.
Simply put, John Paul Jones is swimming in debt. Back in August, the board announced it would close the hospital, but George Alford says there was a plan B, a proposed one-penny hike in the county sales tax with the money going to the hospital.
It gives us a chance, a legitimate chance of continuing to serve rather than just, well, it's been nice.
Not everybody is happy about this.
It's a terrible policy solution. It's no way to run a hospital.
That's Jim Carnes. He's the policy director for Alabama Arise, a citizens advocacy group out of Montgomery.
It's a real shame to put the burden of keeping that hospital open on the backs of Wilcox Countyans who are already facing some of the stiffest economic statistics in the state and the country.
One irony is that Alabama Governor Kay Ivey is from Wilcox County. Alabama is one of the states that rejected a plan to expand Medicaid with incentive dollars from Washington. Alabama Arise believes that if Governor Ivey changes her mind, that could help hospitals in peril like John Paul Jones in Camden. Carnes plans to bring the idea back up in the 2018 legislative session, and he hopes the governor is listening.
We haven't heard the governor say much about the fact that this is happening in her hometown, but I really hope that's keeping her up at night. You know, I really hope that because she knows these people, they are her people.
Supporters of John Paul Jones Hospital in Wilcox County think they'll get permission from the state for the one-penny sales tax hike they want. That could keep services like this automated blood sample unit operating for now. Alabama Arise's goal to get Governor Kay Ivey to do something about expanding Medicaid coverage may be less successful. One of her first acts in office was to disband a task force that was looking at many of the rural health innovations we've talked about during this program. I'm Pat Duggins. For Stan Ingold, Alex Aubuchon, and everyone at Alabama Public Radio, thanks for tuning in, and good night.